Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
So imagine this. It's sometime between midnight and 4 a.m. You're driving down Route 44 in Rehoboth, Massachusetts, when a redheaded man wearing flannel either ends up in your back seat or jumps out in front of your car as you're driving. You panic, slam on your brakes, look around, but there's no one there. The redheaded hitchhiker is just one of the mysteries of the Bridgewater Triangle.
Hello out there, and since it's October, and we are smack dab in the middle of spooky season, we wanted to talk about a local mystery, the Bridgewater Triangle.
If you are into spooky paranormal stuff, you may have heard of the Bridgewater Triangle. And if you are here in Massachusetts, or probably anywhere in New England, you've definitely heard of it.
So the Bridgewater Triangle is a 200 square mile section of land in southeastern Massachusetts. And while Robin and I are technically outside of the triangle, we are right next to it.
We are. And so now that we've said the words Bridgewater Triangle three times already...
Don't worry. Since we said it three times, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, we're safe. Definitely not Beetlejuice. Don't say that three times. But, okay, so what exactly is the Bridgewater Triangle other than a triangle of land in Massachusetts? The Bridgewater Triangle is the site of all kinds of alleged paranormal activity. I'm talking things like UFO sightings, Bigfoot sightings, and other cryptid sightings. But I'm going to tell you all about that in a few minutes, so stick around. The term Bridgewater Triangle, as well as the boundaries of the triangle, were coined by Lauren Coleman, who was a cryptozoologist in his book Mysterious America, which came out in the 1970s. This book is actually still available on Amazon, and I'm going to link it in the show notes if you guys want to check it out. And before I hand it back to Chris, I just want to mention what a cryptozoologist is for anyone who may not know. Cryptozoology is the study of hidden or unknown animals or creatures. Think things like Bigfoot or Thunderbirds, which I'm definitely going to talk about in a little bit. But I wanted to tell you guys something real quick while we're speaking of Lauren Coleman and cryptozoology. There's actually an international cryptozoology museum in Portland, Maine that he founded. Chris and I have been twice, and it's full of all kinds of stuff that Lauren has collected over the years of researching, and it's all related to cryptozoology. There are all kinds of cultural artifacts, models, and plaster of Paris foot casts. If you're ever in the area and have an interest in this sort of thing, go. It's amazing. I'm going to link it in the show notes too, so that way you guys can check out their website.
We loved visiting the museum, and it was one of the only ones in the world, and I think we should definitely go back someday.
Yeah, we're definitely due for a visit back, because I don't think we've been there since before COVID. I actually, while we're talking about it, I know I have some pictures on my phone from our last visit, which I think was like 2018. So I'm going to throw those up on our Instagram, and if you want to check those out, we're the Gen X couple on Instagram. But before I really even get into the Bridgewater Triangle, I just want to talk about something real quick. You're going to hear me mention the name Massasoit a few times throughout the podcast. Where I live in southeastern Massachusetts, most people would recognize the name as Massasoit. We've got Massasoit State Park in Taunton, and there's Massasoit Community College, and they have branches in Brockton, Canton, and Middleborough. But last summer, I had a friend from out of state come to visit me. Hey, Christina. And while she was here, I brought her to Plymouth Plantation, which is in, you guessed it, Plymouth, Massachusetts. Plymouth Plantation is one of those living history museums where you can see exactly what it was like for the English colonists about 7 years after they came to Massachusetts. So that would put us at about 1627. But anyhow, this isn't about Plymouth Plantation. The thing that I wanted to mention was that when my friend and I first arrived at Plymouth Plantation, we ended up getting drawn into a lecture from one of their historians, or I don't know, maybe she's a researcher. I'm not sure what her actual title was. But she was talking about how Thanksgiving didn't happen the way most Americans think it did. I'm not going to get into my feelings on that, but I would definitely encourage you to look up the National Day of Mourning if you're curious about it. And that's all I'm going to say about that. But during the lecture, the historian kept mentioning Massasoit, and I had a feeling she was referring to what I knew as Massasoit. So at the end of the lecture, I asked her about it, and she confirmed that She was referring to Massasoit when she said Massasoit. She told me that based on the research they've uncovered, Massasoit is the correct pronunciation. So that's how I'm going to pronounce it for the rest of the podcast. I just didn't want to create any confusion if there's anybody local listening, and I wanted you guys to know why I'm pronouncing it that way. And if this ever makes it to a member of the Wampanoag tribe, please reach out to me and let me know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. I'm really curious. I would love to talk to you about a whole bunch of things. So email me, even if it's 5 years from now, I would love to hear from you. And while I'm completely off topic, I might as well stay there, right? The word Massasoit means great sachem. You will hear me speak about Massasoit, who was the sachem, or chief, of the Wampanoag tribe when the colonists first landed in Plymouth in 1620. But Massasoit was not actually his name. That's a title. The English colonists mistook Massasoit as his name, and it just stuck. His real name was actually Osamaquin, which I think is a beautiful name. And before I get into the Bridgewater Triangle, one more thing I wanted to remind you guys about is that Chris is terrible at pronouncing things. And the longer you listen to us, I promise you're going to see that for yourself. So in light of that fact, I'm going to be talking a lot more throughout this podcast because some of the words are indigenous words and I have a better chance of pronouncing them correctly than Chris does.
She's right on this.
Yeah, no, I know I am. You guys seriously have no idea. But anyway, here we go. Now we're going to talk about the Bridgewater Triangle for real. So we already told you that the Bridgewater Triangle covers 200 square miles. Some of the towns it covers are Rainham, Taunton, Lakeville, Berkeley, Dighton, Whitman, and its namesake, Bridgewater. There's also East Bridgewater and West Bridgewater, which are separate towns from Bridgewater. Abington, Rehoboth, and Freetown make up the three points of the triangle. So over the years, I've seen many shows and I've read many books about the Bridgewater Triangle. So most of the stuff I'm going to tell you about, I'm pulling from my own brain. But there is a documentary on Amazon, I believe, about the Bridgewater Triangle, if you're curious. I haven't seen it in a few years, but I might go back and rewatch it now that I'm talking about it. We also saw an episode of Beyond Skinwalker Ranch a year or two ago that investigated the triangle. But personally, I feel like they missed the mark a little, and I'll tell you why in a second. The first stop they went to while they were investigating was the Skim Milk Bridge in West Bridgewater, which is right in the middle of the Hockomock Swamp. Fair enough. That's a great spot to investigate. And then next, they went to Anawan Rock, which is a spot where there's been a ton of paranormal activity reported. And, of course, I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. It's one of the Bridgewater Triangle's biggest hotspots. And the third place they investigated in the episode was a spot by the power lines in Rainham, Massachusetts, which is also in the middle of the swamp. The reason I didn't care as much about this location is because it was too similar to the Skim Milk Bridge. And by that, I mean that it's just like a second spot in the middle of the Hockomock Swamp. As a local who knows a lot or a decent amount about the Bridgewater Triangle, I was shocked that they didn't investigate the Freetown State Forest. That's the biggest hotspot of them all within the triangle. But anyway, I'll tell you about all of this stuff and you can decide for yourself. But I just personally feel that if they were doing a true investigation of the Bridgewater Triangle, the Freetown State Forest is something that definitely should have been investigated, or at least mentioned. But anyway, I know I went off on a rant there for a minute. I feel strongly about this, though, so that's why I brought it up. But now we're going to get back to business. I keep going off on tangents. Okay, so you heard me say it a minute ago, and at the heart of the Bridgewater Triangle is the Hockomock Swamp. The swamp is just under 17,000 acres of wetland, and it's considered to be the largest freshwater swamp in the state. The Hockomock Swamp is associated with many of the stories and legends relating to the Bridgewater Triangle. But where does the name Hockomock come from? If you're not from here, then you probably wouldn't even know this, but many of our street names and the names of different locations come from the Wampanoag tribe. Hockomock is an Algonquin word, and it's said to mean place where spirits dwell. The local tribe, the Wampanoags, were one of several Algonquin tribes, and that was because they all spoke the same language, Algonquin. Much of King Philip's War back in 1675 and 1676 took place throughout various locations throughout the Hockomock Swamp. King Philip's War was the bloodiest battle in the United States. More people died per capita during that war than any other fought in this country. Google it if you don't believe me. I don't want to give you guys an entire history lesson here, but I do think it's important to understand a little bit of the history of the land so you guys can fully grasp why there's so much paranormal activity experienced in this area. And sorry, I keep stumbling. I apparently can't talk today. But honestly, this is New England, and I would say it's pretty safe to say that you'd be hard-pressed to find a place that's not haunted. That's just my opinion, but there's a lot of hauntings in the area. But back to King Philip's War. About 3,000 local natives, which was about 75% of their population at the time, and about 600 or 25% of the colonists were killed during this war. You probably already figured this out, but the war was between the indigenous people and the colonists. The colonists were illegally seizing more and more of the land from the indigenous people, and the war was fought because the indigenous people were trying to keep control of their land. King Philip, or Metacomet, the Wampanoag chief at the time, and Massasoit's son, led the tribes into battle. He was killed by a Native American in service to the English at the time. He was down in Mount Hope in Bristol, Rhode Island, when this happened. And after Metacomet, or King Philip, was killed, that's when Annawan took over as chief of the Wampanoags. I cannot talk today. Or another word for chief, as I mentioned earlier, is sachem. And he surrendered to the colonists at Annawan Rock, which is what effectively ended the war. And in case you're wondering to yourself, Metacomet took the name Philip to honor the relations that his father had with the colonists. His older brother, Wamsutta, also changed his name. He went by Alexander. And Wamsutta is actually Massasoit's oldest son, and he was the sachem for a little bit, but he died of natural causes. At first, they thought he was poisoned by the colonists, but he was actually sick at the time. I didn't really look into it to see what he was sick with, but when Wamsutta passed away, that's when Metacomet took over as the sachem of the Wampanoags. And just because I think it's absolutely worth mentioning, the soldier that captured Annawan, Captain Benjamin Church, he promised to spare his life if he surrendered. But some other colonial officials ended up not only killing him anyway, but hanging his head publicly in Plymouth, Massachusetts. It was a terrible war, and if you are interested, I would definitely encourage you to spend some time researching it. It's wild. But it does make you wonder, with so much murder and death in one small area of land, there has to be some bad energy lingering around, don't you think?
Yes, we've done a ghost tour in Plymouth, and it's a very good tour explaining out everything that has happened in the area.
Yeah, that actually is a really good point. We've actually done that ghost tour a bunch of times. What, probably like 6 times at this point, at least?
Yes, and it's scary each time.
It's not scary. It's a little scary. But they give a lot of the history of the colonists, the King Philip's War. They do tell you about some of the hauntings that happen in the area. But it's really good, and they do talk about the history. And who knows, you might even see a ghost. Okay, so that brings us to the first Bridgewater Triangle hotspot of reported activity, other than the entire Hockomock Swamp, of course, and that's Annawan Rock. And as I mentioned, Annawan Rock was the site of Annawan's capture by the colonists. There have been many reports of ghost fires in the woods surrounding the rock. From what I gather, people see smoke like there's a fire, but when they get to the spot where the fire should have been, there's nothing there. And there have also been reports of phantom drumming, chanting, and shadow people in this area. Annawan Rock is located in Rehoboth, Massachusetts, and if you've ever driven down Route 44, you drive literally right by it. And because I mentioned phantom drumming, I want to talk to you about the next paranormal hotspot, and then I'll tell you about mine and Chris's experience there a few years back. And what I'm talking about is the Freetown State Forest, which is located in Freetown, Massachusetts. And this is the second biggest paranormal hotspot outside of the Hockomock Swamp. Sadly, there have been several true crimes that have taken place within the forest. I'm not sure if any of you guys remember the Satanic Panic of the 1980s, but there was some definite satanic activity that took place in the forest. Evidence of animal sacrifices and painted pentagrams were found inside the forest. 3 known murders were committed in the forest between 1979 and 1980, and these are known as the Fall River Cult Murders, and the quote-unquote cult held their rituals inside the forest. This isn't a true crime podcast, so I'm not going to go over the whole case, but I'm sure you can find another podcast about it if you're interested. Plus, I'm sure if you Google it, there are a gazillion articles. But anyway, there are several police reports from people who witnessed satanic activity in the forest, so it's definitely something that happened. Also within the forest is a place known as Profile Rock. It's actually since collapsed, but it used to look like the profile of a man, namely the Wampanoag Chief Massasoit. You know, the guy that welcomed the pilgrims from the Mayflower? Yeah, that guy. Legend has it that a ghostly figure of a man can manifest sitting on this rock with his legs crossed and arms outstretched. No, thank you. Another spot within the forest is called a Sonnet Ledge, and this spot has been the site of numerous suicides and other strange occurrences. People have reported feeling uneasy and disoriented when visiting this spot. There have also been many reports over the years of orbs, phantom lights, disembodied voices, shadow people, and a sense of being watched in the forest. That's creepy. But it's probably the Pukwudgies, and stand by because I am going to talk about the Pukwudgies in a few minutes. I remember reading this book by Christopher Balzano, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. It's Balzano. And it was called Dark Woods, Cults, Crime, and the Paranormal in the Freetown State Forest. It came out in 2008, but I actually just read it a few years ago, and it goes into way more detail about all the activity that's happened within the Freetown State Forest. I'm going to link it in the show notes, and if you're interested, it's a great read. But now I'm going to tell you about mine and Chris's experience in the Freetown State Forest. And he's probably going to deny all of this, but I assure you what happened, and he's just in denial. When I started making the notes and my outline for this podcast, I wasn't sure when this happened. I just knew it was before COVID, and it was. I went back into my camera roll on my phone, and I did actually find a picture that I took of us going down the street that runs through the middle of the forest, the street that like it would lead to the parking lot. So the date that I took the picture was March 4th, 2018. So now I know exactly the date that this happened. And this was actually long before I ever knew that the forest was haunted. I knew about the Bridgewater Triangle, but back then I didn't know as much as I do now. So anyway, at the time we were looking for a new place to check out, and we had decided to go for a walk at the Freetown State Forest. We arrived, parked the car, and picked a trail to go down. The place was very quiet that day, and we didn't see any other people, actually. It might have been early as well, but I think the time of year definitely had something to do with it. Early March isn't the greatest time here in New England. It's cold-ish, muddy, and like I said, there was nobody else there. So we're walking down the trail. We're pretty far in. I'd say probably at least a mile or two because we had been walking for a while when all of a sudden I clocked this drumming off in the distance. And again, I had no idea that the place was haunted at the time, so I figured it was just a group of weirdos out in the woods. I don't know. But let me remind you that the trees were bare, so we could actually see a pretty good distance into the woods, and we didn't see anyone, but the drums were off in the distance, so we kept going. After a few minutes, I started getting the creeps. I can't explain it, but the drums remained consistent the whole time, so no matter how far away we walked from the point where I first noticed them, they never got any louder or softer, which is weird, right? I guess Chris noticed it as well, because mid-stride we made eye contact, literally never said a word to each other, turned around, and booked it back to the car. We didn't run because I don't run, but we walked very briskly. We got in the car and we took off, and to this day, neither of us have ever stepped foot in the Freetown State Forest again, and to be honest, I never will.
I can confirm that we have never been back.
Yeah, but notice how he won't confirm that he heard the drumming, which he did. But anyway, we're going to let that one go for now. So, all right, so we've talked about the Hockomock Swamp, the Annawan Rock, and the Freetown Forest, but a few other hot spots of note that I just wanted to mention real quick are there's a King Philip's Cave in Norton, Massachusetts, and it was said that Metacomet's hiding place, that was his hiding place towards the end of the war. Sorry, can't talk. There have been many reports of those pesky phantom drums there. And also people have seen spook lights, which are unexplained floating balls of light, and phantom fires. And then there's Lake Nippinicket in Bridgewater. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it or not, because we all just call it the Nip. But like with King Philip's Cave, there have been reports of phantom fires, phantom drums, and spook lights. There have also been full-bodied apparitions seen around this area, as well as several varieties of cryptids, such as Bigfoot, giant snakes, and thunderbirds. Don't worry, but I'm going to tell you about all the cryptids in a few minutes. One final hotspot that I wanted to mention is the Taunton State Hospital. This hospital, which is actually still open to this day, was originally built to house the mentally ill. This was back in the 1850s, and back then, as many of us know, they used barbaric techniques to treat patients. You know, like electric shock therapy, prolonged exposure to the cold, and of course, lobotomies. It was really a true house of horrors, and it has been noted that people have heard disembodied voices, screams, and have even been touched by people that weren't there. And I'm only really mentioning this location because I have a close family member who shall remain unnamed, and he can confirm that he's heard voices and screams. But now I want to talk about the mysterious creatures of the Bridgewater Triangle. And the first one I'm going to talk about is the heavy hitter, Bigfoot. There have been numerous documented reports of supposed Bigfoot sightings throughout the Bridgewater Triangle going all the way back to the 1970s. Many of these sightings were written off as bear sightings, but back then there weren't bears in this part of Massachusetts, so who really knows? There are bears here now, though, but definitely not ones the size of what a Bigfoot would be, which, from what I understand, would be like 7 or 8 feet tall. I read through a few accounts of Bigfoot sightings online, and I'm not going to go into specifics other than to tell you that one lady supposedly caught a Bigfoot eating a pumpkin out of her garden sometime in the late 1970s. What stuck out to me the most is that they mostly happened within the town of Bridgewater and West Bridgewater. But for all the supposed sightings, Bigfoot sure does seem to be elusive. Next, I want to talk about Thunderbirds. Thunderbirds are a part of the Wampanoag mythology. The Wampanoag people believe that Thunderbirds were supernatural creatures of great strength and ability. They are said to resemble a pterodactyl and can have a wingspan of up to 12 feet. It has been said that Thunderbirds are strong and big enough to carry a full-grown human off to God knows where. There was actually a report back in the early 1970s from a Norton, Massachusetts police officer who reported seeing a bird that was around 6 feet tall with a wingspan twice its size on his way home from work one night. The sighting took place on or around a place called Bird Hill Road in Mansfield, Massachusetts. I grew up in the town of Easton, which borders both Norton and Mansfield, and I have absolutely no idea where Bird Hill Road is, but you guys can bet that I'm going to find it at some point, and if I ever do, I'll report back. And speaking of Thunderbirds, my mother-in-law grew up in a house that bordered the Hockomock Swamp in West Bridgewater, and to this day she swears she saw a Thunderbird in their yard when she was a little girl. But now I want to talk about Puckwudgies. Yes, you heard me right. I said Puckwudgie, Puckwudgie. In Wampanoag folklore, Puckwudgies are little troll-like creatures, generally described as about 3 to 4 feet tall, and they have smooth but hairy gray skin and large ears. The Wampanoag people consider them to be dangerous. They're tricksters, and they can shapeshift and vanish at will. There have been many sightings of Puckwudgies over the years, and a lot of them come from the Freetown State Forest that I talked about a few minutes ago. One sighting stands out to me, though. I had seen an interview with a guy named Bill Russo, who lives in Rainham, Massachusetts, which is actually the next town over from me. And in the interview, he talked about his encounter as he was walking his dog late one night. Apparently, a Puckwudgie approached him and tried to get Bill to go with it. The interview can actually be seen in that Bridgewater Triangle documentary that I talked about earlier in the podcast. It's on Amazon Prime, and they interviewed him also for that episode of Beyond Skinwalker Ranch that I mentioned. So there are this interview or his interviews are out there if you want to see them. They interviewed near his home for that third investigation in the Beyond Skinwalker Ranch episode. I think the interview is on YouTube as well, so if you're really interested, I'm sure you can find it. And in the interviews, he said that the quote-unquote creature was saying "e-wan-chu" to him, and he believed that it was saying "me" or "I want you," like as in for Bill to go with it. I don't know. That's up to you to decide, but if you're interested in the interviews, like I said, I'm sure you can find them online somewhere. There have also been reported sightings of giant snakes, black panthers, and phantom dogs within the Bridgewater Triangle. And before we wrap up, I want to tell you a few other things of note regarding the Bridgewater Triangle. There have been several UFO sightings in the Triangle, the most famous being from two WHDH radio reporters on Route 24 in March of 1979. Route 24 literally runs right through the Bridgewater Triangle, through Bridgewater and West Bridgewater. And you can see the Hockomock Swamp on both sides of the highway as you drive down Route 24. But anyway, they were driving up or down Route 24. I'm not sure which direction they were heading in. And they had seen a UFO hovering above them as they drove. And as far as credibility goes, I definitely tend to believe these guys a little more. I mean, just think about it and think what it was like back in 1979. I feel like they definitely put their reputation on the line to publicly tell this story. And all I can say is that there have been many other UFO sightings throughout the years, so these two reporters weren't the only ones that saw a UFO within the triangle. But lastly, I want to circle back to that red-headed hitchhiker, you know, the one that I mentioned at the very beginning of the podcast. This guy can be seen on Route 44 right around the Rehoboth-Seekonk line. And the hitchhiker is described as a red-headed man with a full beard, and he's usually seen wearing a red flannel shirt and jeans. He has supposedly been seen a few different ways. Sometimes he's reported as having been seen on the side of the road hitchhiking with his thumb up. Other times he is just seen as a reflection in the windshield. And then the super unlucky ones have this man actually appear in their back seat. Motorists who have reported seeing him say that after they pulled over to offer him a ride, the guy just vanishes. Others have allegedly reported literally driving right through the spirit. I would also like to mention one other thing. I know I keep saying one other thing, but I swear this is the last thing. One other thing that I've heard is that there's a lot of quicksand inside the Hockomock Swamp, but I'm not sure if there were any confirmed reports of that or not. And do you remember me telling you a few minutes ago about my mother-in-law who lived right next to the Hockomock Swamp? Apparently, back in the day, her parents warned her about quicksand, so that story has been around for quite a long time. And that wraps it up, you guys. And what I'm going to say is the mystery remains. I have more questions than answers, and I'm guessing there won't be any answers anytime soon. Chris, do you have anything to add?
Yes, I would just like to thank you, Robin, for pronouncing all those words. It would have been horrible if I had to do that.
Yeah, that would have been a nightmare. I'm trying not to edit these too much because I'm just trying to keep it real with you guys, but that would have been an editing nightmare for me. And I hope you did enjoy our look into the Bridgewater Triangle today. If you made it this far, thank you guys so much for listening. Feel free to tag us or leave us a comment on our socials. You'll find us on Instagram and Twitter at The Gen X Couple. If you want to email us, we're thegenxcouplepodcast@gmail.com. And we will catch you guys next time.
See you later, alligator.
In a while, crocodile.